Welcome to Today's Middle Level Educator, a podcast from National Middle School Association. Joining us today is Mary Henton, manager of the Middle School Portal 2, talking with Callie Stockton, author of Minds in Motion, Active Learning for the Creative Classroom.
This is Mary Henton with National Middle School Association. It's my privilege to be chatting this afternoon with Callie Stockton. Callie is the author of a new publication by National Middle School Association, and the book is entitled Minds and Motion, Active Learning for the Creative Classroom. Callie is a Spanish and adolescent skills teacher at Cache La Poudre Middle School in La Porte, Colorado. Before becoming a public school teacher, Callie held several administrative and teaching positions, including director of a job training program for inner city youth, a hospital department manager, and a management trainer and consultant. Callie has two bachelor's degrees, one in psychology and another in foreign language and literature, and a master's degree in American studies. So thank you, Callie, for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for your time.
Would you tell us to begin with, what led you to write this book?
Well, it actually started as a gift to a student teacher that I was mentoring. I had this really wonderful young woman working with me in my classroom, and she really encouraged me a lot because as I would do different activities with the kids and model activities and things for her, she said, wow, this isn't the kind of thing we learn in the teacher education program, and I really like the kind of things you do. And so as her time was wrapping up with me, I decided to put a collection of activities together as a gift for her to take with her at her first teaching job.
That's wonderful. So she was learning some new approaches by working with you, and how was it that you had begun to use activities of this sort in your teaching? Had you been introduced to these kinds of things in your teaching preparation programs?
I actually hadn't, and that was one of the reasons I, got to thinking about putting a book together, is because I didn't really receive much myself either. Went into the classroom, my first job, it was an empty file cabinet, no mentor, no help to get started. And I kind of had to make it up as I went along. Fortunately, I did enter teaching at a career change after I'd done some other things, and I just started bringing some of the things I'd done before with youth groups I'd worked with the management training, and tried to find different ways to adapt them and change them to fit the middle school age. And I found the kids loved doing things that were active. So I just took some of the things I'd done before, and we've kind of created them together over the years. The students would throw in ideas, and I would, look at a lesson plan and try to figure out a way that would get the kids out of their seats, and it just kind of evolved from there.
So would you be willing to tell us in what ways and in what classes can these activities, the ones that you share in the book, can they be used?
Well, I found that they can really be used in lots of ways. I tried to make them flexible so that the idea behind what the activity is getting at, whether it be collaborative learning or creative thinking or communication skills, you could really fit any content with it. I teach Spanish, so sometimes we do it in a different language. The Skills for Adolescents class really lent itself well to the activities because it was that class really focused on, communication skills, problem solving, working together. But I shared them with science teachers and English teachers and math teachers as well at my school, and they just, plug in their own, content, the topic that they're covering, and use the same type of instructions and, the same purpose behind the activity.
So in addition to activities, getting kids out of the seats and getting them active and engaged and using them to maybe develop skills or teach concepts, how or in what way as a teacher do you gather any information about your students while they're engaged in these activities?
For me, some of the activities that are the most important are the ones early in the year, early in the semester, and early in the book as well. And those are the ones where I'm learning about the kids, how they interact with each other, how they communicate, how they approach a problem, that type of thing. So as, you know, I'm giving the instructions, I'm doing a lot of watching to see, you know, where the kids move, you know, who do they go to, you know, who comes forward to be the leader, who holds back. You get to see a lot, you know, just by watching those first few minutes when you start an activity. And oftentimes I will modify an activity partway through. I may do the same activity with four different classes, and it goes entirely different depending on the mix of boys and girls, the time of day. So it's very flexible.
And the first set of activities in the book are name games. Why name games?
For me, it's really important that the kids know each other by name. And that was one of those things I kind of took for granted. You would think that, you know, they've, you know, been together, you know, in other classes, they should know each other. And I was really surprised to find that even, you know, 3 or 4 weeks into the school year, kids don't know each other's names. They know names of a few kids who maybe get called on more often, either for positive reasons or negative reasons. But there's the kids who are a little quieter, especially if you're in a middle school where kids have come from different elementary schools. Where I am, there's a couple large elementary schools, but then we have kids from some of the mountain schools who very small school, and they don't know the other kids as well. So we spend a lot of time and effort in the first couple weeks, you know, getting to know each other, so there's not those cliques and the kids don't feel left out because they didn't maybe go to the same school with the majority of the other students. And they also find that they treat each other much better when, you know, they have a name and a face. It's not just like, hey, you. It's not, you know, this anonymous kid in the classroom. So that's a real important piece. A lot of the games that we play. And it's an easy thing to learn about someone right away is their name. And also to find out what name a student prefers to be called by. Got a lot of kids who go by their middle names or maybe a shortened version of their name. And starting off with that at the beginning of the year is really important, too.
So it sounds like you're paying attention through these games, these activities, with setting a climate in the classroom that's safe, maybe a little more inviting, warm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and I think, and just respectful, you know, that everyone's included so that, you know, kids aren't feeling left out. Yeah, and it's a matter of, you know, kind of honoring each person. One of the things that I have taught student teachers when they come in, or have even left message for substitute teachers, is that when you call a roll for the first time, just taking a few minutes to say, you know, I'm getting ready to take attendance, you know, I have the roster here. Does anyone go by a first name different than I have on my list? Because I have had a few kids in the past who I've seen other teachers call them by the name that's on the computer list, and other kids giggle, or, you know, because they've never heard the child called by that name before. They didn't know that Tyler was really Ernest. And it just started that teacher off on a bad foot with that student from the very beginning. And so that's just one thing that I just try to avoid, because you don't want them to have a negative experience the very first 10 minutes in your class.
Can you think of a story or an incident where spending time in some of these activities really made a difference, either for a class or a particular group of students or a student? Is there a story, a scene that comes to mind?
Well, one thing I was thinking of when you were talking about, you know, when the activities are used, it's kind of interesting because a lot of it deals with what the energy level is like in the room at the time. There's times when kids are really wound up. I've noticed, particularly after those holidays that involve a lot of sugar that come in from Halloween or one of those, and then it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's not going to work to start off with this, you know, sit down paper and pencil activity right now. We need to, you know, kind of direct some of this energy. And so, you know, to pull out an activity where the kids, you know, get up and move to groups in different parts of the room to answer the questions works better. And just a few minutes of that, then you can kind of get refocused then. There's other times where it's a warm day and it's after lunch and the kids are sleepy and, you know, you need an activity to kind of start building up the energy to get their, you know, blood flowing, oxygen going. So it's almost feel like, you know, you're an orchestra leader in a classroom and it's like, okay, when do we need, you know, kind of bring up the volume? When do we need to bring it down? And what activity, you know, will work well for that? And I find myself doing that a lot with, especially with middle school students.
Well, you know, we hear people talking about, well, certainly the classroom management, motivating young adolescents. So it sounds like paying attention and incorporating these kinds of activities is a technique that can assist, play an important role.
Definitely, because if they're enjoying it, I mean, we have a block schedule 4 days a week at my school, for example, and then what we call Crazy Monday, where they have the short periods. And just even managing the energy level and the pacing of your class between, you know, a short period and a long period. What I really like is when an 80-minute class period is over, and I teach bell to bell. The kids know that they don't have to watch the clock. I'll let them know, you know, half a minute before it's time to go, it's time to pack up. And kids will say, oh, is it over already? And that's the kind of thing I really, you know, love to hear is when the time goes and they don't, you know, they're not bored, they don't watch the clock. They enjoy it, so they're more engaged. And then I enjoy it more, too, because teachers can get bored in an 80-minute class as well if you don't have a lot of variety.
Can you talk a little bit about using activities to develop students' team skills or ability to work in teams? That's, you know, one of those lifelong skills that are part of what we do in education, aside from or in addition to our content. So what role do using activities play in helping students develop team skills?
Yeah, we definitely are hearing more about, you know, future careers and what employers are looking for in addition to, you know, knowledge and certain technical skills. It's just the ability to work with others. And we forget sometimes that as students come in, you know, to our classrooms, that they haven't really been taught necessarily how to do that. And they have learned to play together in elementary school and start doing some things together as they get into fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. But to have actual roles where they can take turns being the leader and facilitating the discussion. Some of the activities that are in the book deal with some competitions between groups where who can come up with the most uses for an item, or we have some anagrams and games where you play with words. And the students learn that they can bounce ideas off of each other, and what one student says gives them an idea for something else. We've demonstrated that by having them try the activity on their own first and see what they come up with, and then have them get into pairs or small groups and try it. And, you know, and they then get to actually experience the difference between trying to do it on their own and then doing it with some of their peers. And can see, you know, the success that comes from that. And also, they also get a real sense of accomplishment when they can contribute to the group. They come up with the answer, find the piece to the puzzle or something that needs to happen. It's kind of like, you know, being the kid that scores the goal or makes the basket. And for kids who maybe don't have a chance to be on an athletic team, they get to experience that kind of contribution in a classroom setting. And you can, they, you know, the look on pride on their face when, you know, they kind of help their team move ahead is really, it's really a neat thing to see.
So do you take time at the end of activities to process, debrief, talk about what worked, what didn't, why did so-and-so, or why did you choose to do it this way as opposed to some other way, et cetera?
I guess we do. So some activities that are routine that we have done several times, we don't always, you know, need or to take the time to process them, but particularly for new activities, we do. And also if there's anything that happens that's either a conflict or something that goes particularly well, it's good to, you know, stop and give the kids a chance to explain that, ask questions about it, see how they'd maybe do it differently the next time. So, you know, kind of making real explicit those things that, you know, you're observing and that they're seeing, you know, helping, you know, put some words to it.
And have you ever had kids to come up with ideas for activities?
Yeah, I have, and that's been a lot of fun because they're very creative that way. One of the games the kids have liked to play for a long time is, in fact, they taught me because I never played it as a child, was Heads Up, Seven Up. And when they told me they wanted to play Heads Up, Seven Up one day, because we were waiting for a projector to be fixed. It was one of those times that teachers sometimes have where it's, okay, what do we do now? You know, the media guy's putting the new bulb in. Let's play Heads Up, Seven Up. What's that? So they were telling me how you put your heads, you know, down, put your thumbs up, and we tap. And I'm thinking, okay, that's kind of interesting. But we ended up actually turning it into a name game because when the students who were the ones picking other students stand in the front of the classroom, you have to guess who you think picked you. And you call the student by name that you think is the one that tapped your finger. Well, one day there was we had a small group of students because the other groups were out having hearing and vision testing done or something, and there were just 8 students in the classroom. They said they wanted to play Heads Up, Seven Up. And I said, how are you going to do that with 8 students? And this one girl said, well, why don't we have 4 up and 4 down? And so, okay, we'll try that. And when we tried it and the person guessed, well, if they guessed correctly, that really eliminated the possibilities quite a bit for the other people guessing. So she said, well, why don't we say, instead of yes or no that I picked you, why don't we say maybe? And that way it leaves the, you know, option open of, you know, who might have been the one that picked you. And so I thought, well, I'm not quite sure how that'll work, but we'll try it. And it worked beautifully. So in fact, from then on, even when we had more students, we played it that way, and the kids really enjoyed kind of doing the bluffing of, you know, Tyler, did you pick me? Maybe. You know, and then when we were all done, they point to who they actually picked. And then we talked a little bit about probabilities and things like that. Okay, if we did it the other way and, you know, you were the last one to pick and 2 people had gotten it right and, you know, they can take just a simple thing like tapping someone's thumb and turn it into, you know, a really much more complex and interesting, you know, way to look at things.
Yes, and I see Heads Up, Seven Up here in the book. That was one that I hadn't read through. Wonderful. Well, as we come to a close here, is there anything else that you'd like to share? Anything else that you think it would be helpful for folks to know about either using activities or about this book?
I think the main thing is that there are so many creative things I'm sure teachers already do in the classroom, and it's just nice to have a collection of things that, you know, for those, you know, 5 to 15 minutes blocks of time, either to start a class, to end the class, you know, have something like, say, for those situations when you have to go to plan B because the copy machine broke or the projector's not working. Teachers, you know, are constantly having to switch gears and change plans. And so yeah, I'm really hoping that the activities in the book are a starting point for people to open it up and say, hey, this would work really well today with this activity. What I try to do is anytime I think to myself something that's real common, like how many of you, blah, 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 raise your hand. Well, what could I do instead of raise your hand? Kids raise their hand, you know, all day long. Raise your hand, raise your hand, raise your hand. It's like, you know, okay, what can we do instead? So that's why the one activity, vote with your feet, where, you know, kids, you know, actually get up and position themselves depending on the strength of their opinion on something. And it's just more dynamic than raising their hand. So I guess that would be a good key for teachers that, you know, where would they fit in well with an activity? If it's expressing a view or an opinion, you know, there's several activities that relate well to that. If it's working together in a group, there's activities that, you know, can be used you know, lots of different ways rather than just turn to the person next to you, you know, and share your idea. So I'm hoping that it'll be a starting point for some really cool things. I hope to hear from teachers with kind of like what my students have done. I took this activity and then this is what we added to it. And that will be really interesting.
Well, we so much appreciate that you wrote this book, and what a wonderful thing that started out as a gift to your student teacher. I love that story, and as an encouragement to teachers to begin to look for ways to engage students in other types of action in the classroom to enhance, to strengthen learning, to develop skills, and to establish, help to establish a culture that says this is a safe place, we respect each other, and it's also okay to take a risk once in a while and try something new.
That's right, and to laugh together and to have fun learning, really, is what it's all about, so that, you know, learning, you know, is fun.
Well, thank you so much, Callie, for taking the time today. We appreciate this, and look forward to hearing more and reading more, and, yes, to engage folks in some conversation about how these activities, how they use them in their classroom, or how they adapt and add to and come up with new ones would be wonderful.
Thank you very much. It's been wonderful talking with you, and I'm anxious to, like I say, to hear what kind of experiences people have out there. I just hope they enjoy the activities as much as I have with my students.
Well, I'm sure they will, and again, thank you.
You can read more about NMSA's new release, Minds in Motion, and download sample activities in the online store at www.nmsa.org/store. Thank you for joining us on today's Middle Level Educator.